Order. So can you, Eric, do a roll call to make sure we have a quorum, please?
Yes. Obviously, Chairman Campo, you're there. Commissioner Clunan?
Here.
Commissioner Corgi? Okay, I'll circle back. Commissioner Cruzon?
Good morning, I'm here.
Corgi's here.
Okay, Corgi, Cruzo, Commissioner Don Carlos, I see you, sir.
I'm here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald?
Here.
And Commissioner Meese?
Here.
All right, we have a full attendance, sir.
Okay, great, great. So let me just open with some really exciting news. We recently heard that, I guess, a list comes out that says that our channel is the busiest waterway in the nation. The Houston Ship Channel Complex and its public-private terminals, collectively known as the Port of Houston, is now the number one port in the United States in terms of total waterborne tonnage. This ranking was released by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Navigation and Civil Works Decision Support Center, which tracks and compiles the statistics. Nearly 285 million tons of cargo moved through the Port of Houston overall in 2019. This was about 47 million tons more than any other U.S. port and a 6% increase compared to the previous year. Houston's port surpassed the Port of South Louisiana, which previously held the top spot. Houston continues to be the leader in foreign waterborne tonnage, as it has been for the last 24 years. The number one ranking and its importance to the region, state, and nation clearly highlights the need to expedite the improvements of the Houston Ship Channel and accommodate growth and ensure safe and efficient trade for the U.S. I'd like to give you a WERDA update. And speaking of channel improvements, we believe that we're close to the next major milestone of authorization of Project 11. According to the Congressional Committees of Jurisdiction, the Senate Committee on Environmental and Public Works, and the House Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, a final agreement on WERDA 2020 has been reached, and the authorization for our channel improvement has been included in the final bill text. We are hearing that the bill may be passed by the end of next week, putting us one step closer to the commencement of the much needed project. While the congressional authorization of Project 11 is significant, the next major step in the delivery process will be to secure a New START designation from the administration and discretionary funding for the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers. Securing a New START is a challenge critical to the process for expediting commencement of the construction. There are a limited number of New STARTs in the Energy and Water Appropriation Bill. Our Houston port team, along with other industry partners, continue to advocate for the inclusion of our deep water channel in a New START appropriation in order to move quickly to the advertisement and construction of the deepening and widening project. The design for the project, being led and funded by Port Houston and working with our engineering consultants, is very near 100% as we continue to push to turn dirt on this project as soon as possible, providing significant benefits to the nation. I'd also like to comment on a couple of items that are going to be on that we're going to be discussing today. The first one would be our disparity study. As you know, we contracted with Griffin and Strong to do the disparity study. I guess it was the summer before last, and as a result of sort of the timing of COVID and everything else, we were hoping to get it done in the summer of 2020, but we have a discussion of it today. I think that the disparity study has to be thought of in a couple of ways. First, we've been asked by our local governments that appoint us to do the study, and Harris County has completed their study. Metro is in the process of completing their study. My understanding is the Metro study will be done in January and presented to their board in February. I think it's sort of interesting timing when you think about a disparity study, because what it's about thinking about the future. You have to look at the past in order to think about the future, I think. And what this study does is it sets a benchmark, and it shows that we have a lot of work to do going forward to provide what we've been talking about for a long time, which is social, racial, and economic equity for the community. I think that the disparity study does set the baseline, and we now can go forward with new programs to help with those issues. We have an incredible, successful small business enterprise program, and we've exceeded $600 million to the local community. And I think with the knowledge that we're going to gain from this disparity study, it'll allow us to enhance that program to provide more economic, social, and racial equity in our community. And we're excited about moving forward with that. And I know we're going to have lots of discussion about that today. The other thing I'd like to talk about a little bit before we get started is that yesterday we had a pilot commission meeting, and the pilot commission approved the new funding and operational go forward plan effective January 1st. I want to thank the pilots and Roland Garcia, who chaired the transition committee, for getting this done. So the Port Commission will be totally disconnected from the pilot commission in terms of providing services under the interlocal agreement effective January 1. The new agreement, we are going to modify the interlocal agreement, and it becomes mostly a cooperation agreement going forward. No money involved, other than just simply allowing the pilot commission, people to talk to the Port Commission to ensure an orderly transition, but no monetary connections at all. Mostly just cooperation, which of course we want to cooperate as a major user of the port with the pilots, and we understand the pilots are absolutely critical to the efficient and safe operation of our channel. So I'm excited about having that completed and going forward. So we'll talk about that also in our meeting. Lastly, I just want to thank our port employees. This will be our last meeting before the beginning of next year. And so I want to wish our frontline folks, just an amazing holiday season for you. Thank you for what you do every single day. You are the ones who are processing and bringing in the key cargoes that everyone needs. All those Christmas presents under the trees come through the port. So we really appreciate you stepping up and doing a great job for us. I also want to thank our administrative staff who continue to work remotely. And, when you think about working remotely, it's not a vacation. Trust me, we know that. They continue to work hard and diligently to make sure that all of our business goes forward and our payroll gets done, our medical expenses get paid, and we continue to really appreciate those folks as well. And then lastly, safety is a big issue and continues to be a big issue. So I want to shout out to our police and our fire folks. You do a great job, and we really appreciate what you do every single day. So it's all about moving cargo. It's all about building, increasing the channel. Our channel team has done a great job, and I think 2020, given everything that we've had to face with the pandemic and all the new protocols that we've had to do to move forward in a positive way, has actually been, a really good year on a relative basis for Port Houston. So with that said, I appreciate everything everybody's doing. So that'll conclude my remarks. The next item on the agenda is to approve the minutes from our meeting on October 27, 2020. And we will handle voting the same way we have since we've been virtual, where I'll call for the motions, and then we'll have any negative votes, and then if there's no negative votes, then we'll pass it. So is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? If not, do I hear any negative votes? Being none, the minutes pass. Roger, would you go ahead and give us some staff reports at this point?
Yes, I will. Thanks, Rick, and appreciate welcome all of our guests here today. We've got a long agenda today, and look forward to all the items. I first want to make a comment about, you saw the scroll of all of those folks that have either retired this year or have a significant milestone anniversary with the port. you know, it's very important. It's unfortunate that we've had to celebrate some of those retirements and anniversaries virtually this year. But we want to recognize all those people and their contribution to the team and to the success of the port. And so we'll be scrolling that as well after the meeting while we adjourn for executive session. But again, thanks to all those folks who have been a big part of our success. A few highlights on the operating financial front. November container volume continued at a very strong pace, picked up from October. October was up 15%. Follow that up with November with a 7% increase over 2019. Over November of 2019 and through 11 months of this year, we've handled 2.72 million TEU, which basically puts us virtually flat with this point last year. So the recovery from some very lean months in the summer has been quite successful for our port. General cargo tonnage is still down about 40% from last year, but I can tell you it's good to sit here and look out my window right now. We got several ships working at the turning basin, so that's good news for us here at the port. So all this activity generated revenue that's really just about 1% shy of where we were last year. So phenomenal year in spite of all the things and the challenges that we've had. I don't know, Kelly, do you have, can you put up those slides? I got a couple slides to show you if we can. Are they, Kelly? There we go. I just wanted to put up a few photos of some recent environmental and community initiatives that highlight our continued commitment to the improvement of quality of life and sustainability for our region. This is the electric yard truck that we just received last week. And it was one that we obtained through some partnership with grant funding, with the TCEQ, and it's also going to pay. The next slide, you'll see the charging station there. So we'll be putting this thing through its paces for the next year to have a better understanding of the efficiency. But it's just another aspect of, you know, our goal to continue to implement equipment that reduces emissions at our port. The other thing I want to touch on from a community standpoint, it was a project that was recently completed. It was a partnership with Harris County and Galena Park for funding a sidewalk project that connects Jacinta City and the Galena Park areas. It was a very successful project. It's the sidewalk project connecting students to schools. And it was one that it took a little while. There was a lot of things goes across a dredge disposal area, which Corps of Engineers has some easements on, but it was great to cut the ribbon on that thing. And next slide, Commissioner Garcia and Commissioner Fitzgerald and Commissioner Don Carlos present for that ribbon cutting. So we're excited about that breaking ground and having a safe pathway so they don't have to walk on the streets between those communities. And and I know Commissioner Don Carlos pushed for that for a long time. I appreciate your efforts on that. The last thing is just to highlight, we have continued to meet frequently with the Healthy Port Communities Coalition and Environmental Defense Fund. It's on the agenda today in our community committee meeting to discuss in more detail some of the environmental initiatives and outreach later this morning. I see Elena Crafts here today. She's going to speak here in a little bit. Thanks for joining us today. And that's all I have, Chairman.
Okay, great. I appreciate that, Roger. Thanks. We have a number of appearances today, and so I want to remind everyone that we have a 3-minute limit generally, and that does not include questions. With that said, knowing that some of our folks that have asked for time to speak have very busy schedules. Everybody does, but I'm going to start with Commissioner Rodney Ellis. Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and commissioners, and I appreciate the work that all of you do. Good to see my colleague over from City Hall. I think I see Councilmember Robert Gallegos there. Mr. Chairman, I just sent you a copy of that little note that I gave you when
I see it.
Pointed out, and I shared that with your colleagues one time so they'll get my sense of humor. I put five items on that notice, which means letting the city and the county and other entities that appoint you all know what's going on before we read about it in the papers, if you can. The second item was MWBE. I think I listed, it looks like County Insight. I do write bad. Then here's the fourth one. All of you all will enjoy. Do not go crazy. I have no idea what I meant by that. And the other one was the internship program. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all of you on the board for agreeing to do the disparity study. I dug up some of those old letters that I wrote to you all before asking you to do one, and it was the right thing to do. And I want to encourage you because the county has done its study, and your numbers, I'm told, are pretty much about where the numbers are for the county. Metro is doing a study. We'll see where that numbers are. We have also asked from the county side that the hospital district, Harris Health, go and do a study as well. We're doing a big review of county government, and PFM, the folks who are giving us ideas, had an interesting phrase. They said they found a lot of misplaced exceptionalism. And I was wondering what they meant. And I thought about when I was on city council, everything we did 30 years ago, we all said it was the model for the nation. With really no metrics for saying it, Councilmember Gallegos. And then when I went to the state, everything we did, including me, we always put out a notice, Roger Gunther, it was a model for the nation. And at the county, we were doing that. This is just a Texas thing, the braggadocious nature of who we are as a people. But metrics are important. And these metrics show we have a long way to go in terms of leveling the playing field. The Chamber of Commerce did a study. It was kind of interesting. They got the MetLife folks to pay for it. The president of U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Susan P. Clark, stated that, quote, the pandemic's disproportionate impact on minority-owned small businesses is further evidence of systemic inequities in our country. Even more concerning, the pandemic could exacerbate and elongate the economic struggles already facing minority and women-owned businesses and families. This study shows, as the county study shows, there's a lot that we can do. I want to commend Mr. Strong and his group for what they did. I'm hoping we collaborate between the county, the city, the hospital district, metro, because when you look at whatever your recommendations are, there are things we can do to share expenses and pool resources so that 100 years from now, our minority and women-owned businesses won't still be at the back of the bus. So I just want to commit to working with you. I have asked on the issue of notice that, Mr. Chairman, you or someone, probably your representative, the Strong Group, make a presentation to Commissioner's Court when it works for you, because we really ought to pool resources. I sent a text to the mayor, kind of giving him my thoughts, and he and I got a visit during the holidays. But I think it's an opportunity. Strong is from Atlanta. All of this really started under Maynard Jackson. When he shut down that Atlanta Hartsfield Airport, stopped the bulldozers on the runways, and said, if we don't open this up and level the playing field, he was the mayor. He said, I'm the mayor, and we won't complete this airport. That is not a business airport in this country. And maybe the first or second busiest airport in the world. So, hey, I commend you, and I want to work with you, and thank you for giving me the time.
Thank you, Commissioner. I really appreciate your comments. And we will see you at Commissioner's Court, probably after the first of the year, though. In terms of, so the next up is City Council Member Robert Gallegos. Go ahead. We can't hear you right now. Let's see. Kelly, can you unmute him? You're still muted.
He was unmuted. I've sent a request for it to unmute. There. Oh, try again, sir.
It was still muted.
It unmuted for a second.
There we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can now. Yes. Go ahead, okay, council member.
Thank you. First of all, good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Court Commissioners. Also, good morning, Commissioner Rodney Ellis. It was good seeing you at the East End Bike Ride this past Saturday. Again, thank you for this opportunity. This is my first time actually addressing the port within these past 2-3 months. So I want to start off by thanking y'all for working with the city, working with me in regards to those 15 acres on the north side of Buffalo Bayou there at Hidalgo Park. I received a call from Commissioner Corgi a couple of months ago that the Port Authority and the city is working on a lease agreement on those 15 acres on the north side of Buffalo Bayou. So therefore, we can have an expansion, hopefully, of Hidalgo Park. So I appreciate the Port Authority for doing that. I also want to quickly just discuss regarding the disparity study. I know that I did participate back in 2018 when we were discussing the possibility of the port doing a disparity study. I'm glad that the port did decide to do this disparity study. I'm looking forward to hearing what the findings are. This is the beginning of the future of port operations. The findings of the disparity study will provide recommendations to resolve any past disparities based on race and gender. So I'm hoping, like Commissioner Ellis stated, hopefully this will now be more of a fair playing field, so that way everyone can have the opportunity of doing business with one of the major economic companies, corporations, basically, that we have here in the city of Houston in regards to the port. So I'm excited about this and looking forward to hearing what the findings are. And again, thank you once again for working with the city in regards to those 15 acres on the north side of Buffalo Bayou at Hidalgo Park. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we really do look forward to the park. That's going to be a really fun project to work on. So we're excited about that. Okay, our next person up is Roland Garcia, Commissioner of the Pilot Board of Harris County and the Harris County Ports, and also the Chairman of the Transition Committee. So, Roland, I think you're up. So if you can make sure he's unmuted. I see you, but okay, Kelly, we need to get him unmuted.
Just working on, there we go.
Can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chairman Campo. Yes, I'm Roland Garcia. It's a pleasure to be here. Commissioners, you may recall I was at your September 29 meeting, and at that time we were in the middle of RFPs, and I'm very pleased to inform you, as Chairman Campo has mentioned, we've now completed the RFP process. We've completed and negotiated contracts, we voted to approve contracts. It's been a really massive effort by our transition committee. I want to thank Reginald McCamey, Brenda Hillier, Francis Castaneda Vadias on that effort. We've reached a milestone with the funding memorandum of understanding with the Houston Pilots. They really stepped up to do an interim funding plan for our board. It's a 15-month plan, and within that first 15 months, we intend to conduct public hearings to determine a permanent funding solution. But it's we're off and running. We passed a budget. It's a very conservative budget. Commissioners, it's based in part on estimates we received from the port, but also based on the market responses to RFPs. It's a conservative budget, about $350,000 a year, which is what turned out to be the amount from the proposals we got from the bidding firms. We've negotiated contracts for executive director and investigator. I think you all know Tyler Gavis, Captain Gavis, who's been working on that with while he was at the port. We received multiple proposals there. That was the best value, and of course, we have a known quantity. We've there are RFPs for legal counsel. We have three firms, one our general counsel, one to assist with rate hearings, and one to assist with maritime investigations and incidents. We've entered into a lease, negotiated a lease with the Economic Alliance of Houston Port Region. I think you all are familiar with that organization. It's a good location and well known to the maritime community. We have a banking arrangement with Cadence Bank. They submitted an RFP. And then the last is the we're asking commissioners today to adopt a slimmed down version of the interlocal agreement. As Chairman Campo mentioned, it's really just to facilitate the cooperation and the transition, and not just in the coming year, but really in perpetuity, because you know, there will be future rate hearings, there will be future incidents, there will be future activity, and we'll just interlocal will allow us to communicate with our then counsel from years ago. You know, what happened here? How did we do that? What's the best practice of doing this, and allow us to maintain the privilege and work product that we have, and so that it's not lost. And so, of course, we've helped with the joint goal of port safety, efficient waterways, and transportation. And so we have that common goal there from common legislation. And I will assure the commissioners, we will be fully independent, self-sustaining. That's where we are, and that's where we intend to be. And we look forward to ongoing cooperation with the commissioners. I want to thank Chairman Campo for working with us. It's been a big help on the transition. I want to thank Captain Tyler Gavis, Captain Woodring, and of course, your counsel, Eric Erickson, who's been a big help in all of this process. And I'm pleased to answer any questions, Chairman Campo.
Commissioners, do you have any questions for Mr. Garcia? Doesn't look like it. Thank you, Roland. I really do appreciate all of your hard work and your transition committee's hard work, knowing that it was a big lift, and getting it done on schedule is great. So I appreciate that. Okay, so thanks. The next speaker that signed up prior to the meeting is Elena Kraft at the Environmental Defense Fund. So you're ready to go. Are you unmuted?
Yes, good morning.
There you are. Good.
Hi. Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for providing the opportunity for me to give some remarks today. I'm Dr. Elena Kraft, Senior Director for Climate and Health at Environmental Defense Fund. I'm a toxicologist by training, and I've been working on air quality issues in the Houston region for close to 15 years now. In fact, some of the very first work of my career was actually focused on ports work, including at Port Houston, which was Port of Houston back then. I've known many of the staff members for many years, and we've worked and continue to work hand in hand with the staff on a variety of emission reduction projects. For example, we have helped, I think I saw the drayage yard hostler that was there and on the front of the remarks that was secured in part with some funds from TCEQ and through the DERA program as well, I believe. And you know, over the years we've helped to secure $24 million in grant funding for projects like that. It's meaningful work, and I think it's a testament to the kind of progress that we can make when we're all working together. I'm here today because most recently we've been discussing with port staff the Project 11, which is the six-year dredging project that's sponsored by the port, as you all know. We are concerned that the project as it currently stands undermines recent commitments made by port leadership toward achieving its goal of being an environmental leader. The project relies on some of the oldest and dirtiest equipment to dredge the Houston Ship Channel, ultimately generating as much pollution as an additional oil refinery or a power plant along the channel. So this is a significant amount of pollution generated by this project. The issue here is that this pollution will exacerbate Houston's decades-old problems with ground-level ozone, and it will cause greatest harm to your community members along the ship channel. We know that ozone contributes to asthma events, heart disease, and a slew of other adverse health outcomes. And new research shows its contribution to underlying conditions that make COVID-19 deadlier to those communities, many of which are already overburdened by pollution. You may have heard recent statements from CDC this week that COVID mortality rates are 3 times higher in Black and Brown communities. It's a serious issue. We also believe that the plan as it currently stands will undermine a lot of the work that we've been doing with other industry partners along the ship channel to reduce pollution from marine vessels. We've identified lots of projects that could reduce thousands of tons of marine pollution, but Project 11's dredging emissions could erode much of that. The other issue here is that without offsetting those thousands of tons of pollution that are generated, this project could trigger stricter environmental regulations for companies along the ship channel. That's because Houston is on the cusp of being designated a severe non-attainment area for ozone. Basically, air pollution is a zero-sum game for the region. So if the port generates a lot of pollution through its projects, then ultimately those reductions are going to have to be made up by others who are operating in the region. So one issue here is that the port initially told TCEQ that it would mitigate the dredging pollution by purchasing discrete emission reduction credits for around $16 million. However, for reasons that I think are unclear, TCEQ has said that it's now not necessary to buy the credits. We have some ideas on specific emission reduction opportunities that can reduce diesel pollution from Project 11. And I like to say here that I want to be clear that we are not trying to undermine this project. I have 2 small kids who are counting on Santa to come through on Christmas with gifts for their good behavior, and they're not aware of it. But, you know, I know that Santa comes through the port. So we know the value of the work that goes on at the port, and we're not trying to undermine the project. What we're trying to do here is to ensure that the project is done as responsibly as possible and that the port is held accountable to its mission to be an environmental leader. Other projects around the country have run into similar issues with these kinds of dredging projects and have found ways to offset those emissions. We have provided some examples to port staff of how that has worked at the Port of New York, New Jersey, for example, with regard to replacing older tugboats with newer, cleaner engines to offset some emission, some pollution caused by those dredging projects. TCEQ will not finalize the conformity determination until after a public comment period, which is set to end December 21st. We are encouraging the public to submit comments, asking TCEQ to require mitigation of these thousands of tons of pollution that will be generated by the project. And we believe that the support from the community, as well as industry stakeholders who would have to make up those emission reductions, will be unprecedented. So thanks for your time. I think ultimately I'm here today to ask Port leadership to commit to being a good steward and ensuring that any project that ultimately does have the underlying goal of increasing efficiency and making the ship channel operate more smoothly takes the appropriate and responsible steps to offset the tremendous health burden that this project could generate. So thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions or share additional information or talk offline as well.
Well, we appreciate your comments. We definitely want to continue to be a leader in environmental stewardship. And, you know, the when you think about Project 11, while it is a port project, it essentially is a Army Corps of Engineer project first, and we're kind of the secondary, player in the game. But ultimately, we definitely want to be good environmental stewards, and let's make sure that we all get together and understand what your priorities are and where we can find common ground, and we'll go forward with that. Commissioners, any other questions? Okay, great. Thanks so much for your time today.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Could you send me the examples from New York, New Jersey, the way they mitigated the dredging up there?
We're happy to do that. Who should I send that
Dean
to?
For, just that, Dean asked for that. We'll just send it to Roger and team, and he'll get it out to the commissioners, okay?
Thanks.
Great.
Thank you. Get out to everyone.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments or questions? Okay, so next on the list, we're going to go to Rodney Strong, who's the project executive for the Port of Houston Authority 2020 Disparity Study. And with him, he has the project executive, I believe, is Dr. J. Vincent Egan. We have principal investigator, Dr. Ram, sorry about this on your name, Hagachi, and chief statistician, and also Michelle Clark Jenkins, project manager of Griffin and Strong PC. So the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the commission, elected officials. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here this morning to give you our presentation on the findings of the disparity study. We've worked really hard on this study and with your team. Ms. Michelle Clark Jenkins, who was the project manager for the project, will give you the presentation, but we also have present to answer any questions, Dr. J. Vincent Egan, who is an expert in this area, and he was our principal investigator on the project, and then Dr. Ram Hagigi, who is our chief statistician and who happens to actually be based in Texas. He lives right outside Austin, Texas, and is a tremendous statistician. In addition to that, I'd like to mention that on this video conference call, we have two of our local partners, Ms. Vesta Ray of Vesta Ray and Associates, who's a certified WBE, is our local partner here. And we also have Mr. Willie Coleman, attorney Willie Coleman from Bates and Coleman, and they're our local legal counsel. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle Clark Jenkins. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me as well?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. And can everyone see the screen?
We can see the screen, but we can't see you. I think your camera is off.
Okay. So this was our technical approach for the disparity study. And it's, as you can see, there are a number of components to a disparity study, which is why it takes over a year to complete. We did a legal analysis. Disparity studies are a creation of the court. And as such, we follow a methodology created by the court. We also did a deep dive into your purchasing practices, policies, and procedures. Those are really important as we move forward to try to craft recommendations based upon the findings of the study. The largest part of the study is the collecting and cleaning of data, though that's the most challenging part as well. Then when we begin our analysis, the first thing we have to do is to determine what it is we're studying, the relevant market, both a geographic market as well as a product market. And then, of course, our disparity analysis is a comparison of utilization of firms compared to the availability of firms. And then we also do a private sector analysis, which actually is an analysis of the marketplace disparities. Then ultimately, we did an extensive anecdotal evidence collection and analysis. That's critical to talk to firms in your market area to find out what their experiences have been. And again, that helps to shape our final report and our recommendations. What is a disparity study? I know we have members of the public who are listening, as well as others who might not be familiar with disparity studies, but it is meant to be an objective research tool to determine whether there's an inference of active or passive discrimination that can be made based on how you contract. Discrimination, as we define that, is in Croson, which we'll talk about in a second, which is the Supreme Court case that really defined this area. It may be the current effects of past discrimination. In other words, it's not an indictment necessarily of a current administration. What it is it's showing that there's, over the years, there has been some discrimination that has resulted in these disparities. And we do that by looking at both statistical and anecdotal evidence. And at the end of our study, it is meant to have recommendations for policy. Again, the legal basis for a disparity study, there's a case in 1989 heard by the US Supreme Court, City of Richmond versus J.A. Croson, which was followed by Adirond Constructors, Inc. versus Pena. In those two cases, the court said that preference programs can run afoul of the 14th Amendment. In other words, malevolent preferences or discrimination when you're discriminating against someone, and preferences when you're preferring one group over another are really the same in the eyes of the 14th Amendment, unless you overcome that with a factual basis in evidence and a compelling governmental interest. And then that the outcomes of our studies must be narrowly tailored. In other words, when we make our recommendations, they have to be tailored to the findings of our study. Since that time, the Supreme Court really hasn't spoken again on this, but there has been a lot of shaping of disparity studies and their methodology through the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal decisions. In your Fifth Circuit, it's been the Coastman case as well as Scott versus Jackson. So our study parameters were, we looked at your fiscal year 2015 through 2019. We looked at all payments. So we looked at all of your expenditures during that period, and we separated it by industry categories. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that our study is focused on whether there has been discrimination in various industry categories. And we looked at five: construction, A&E, professional services, other services, and goods. Our first analysis, as I mentioned before, was to determine what are we studying, where are we studying. And if we kind of borrow from antitrust law, which is looking at where at least 75% of your dollars are being spent. And that was determined that it was the city of Houston's three counties of Harris, Montgomery, and Fort Bend. I always think that's good news because what it's saying is that more than 75%, and in your case, we were looking at 85% plus, was being spent right there in your local community with firms who are located there. So availability, which is kind of central to our analysis, and how do we determine whether a firm is available to do business with you. For purposes of a disparity study, we're looking at whether there are firms who have demonstrated interest in doing business with government. They're located in the relevant geographic market area called the RGMA, and they perform in the relevant industry category. The study does not look at whether firms perform a specific scope of work for you. That is something that is carried out in the implementation and how you move forward, perhaps with our recommendations. But for purposes of a disparity study, we are analyzing industry categories and whether there's been discrimination there. We also looked at capacity, which is the ability or the capacity to perform the work, and it's tested through a regression analysis. In other words, what we're looking at is whether or not we've looked at whether there's a disparity, and then we're looking at whether a disparity is a statistically significant disparity, and then we have to take it one step further to say what is likely to have caused that disparity. So we equalize a number of other factors, you know, the size of the firm, the number of employees they have, the revenues. We kind of equal out all those other things. And if there is still a disparity, then we can make a legal inference of discrimination. So these were our findings, and we'll demonstrate them to you by industry category. In that third column is the percentage of dollars that you spent over the study period, both with primes and subcontractors. Again, remember, this is only within the firms that are located within the relevant market. And when we talk about located, it's where we looked at firms wherever their closest location to you was. So if they have a location or an office in the relevant market, then they were counted in the disparity study. So you'll notice that in construction services, total MWBE dollars were 11.13%, as compared to in the next column, 45.51% of available firms. So again, our comparison is MWBEs in each category as compared to all firms. So the disparity index, which is in the fifth column, tells us whether or not there was a disparity between the percentage of dollars spent with the percentage of available firms. 100 is parity. So that means if the percentage of dollars were equal to the availability, then it would say 100. So anything under 100, and of course the lowest it is under 100, the more the disparity. And then that next column just tells you that whether there is underutilization and overutilization, and the asterisk tells you whether it's statistically significant. And we determine that statistically significant is anything less than 80%. So if you'll notice, in every category of MWBE groups, there was a statistically significant underutilization of those firms. In A&E, again, the total MWBE percentage of dollars was 5.89%. That was 5.76% minority firms and 0.13% non-minority women-owned firms. The percentage of available firms in those categories was 47.83%. So again, we have a disparity index of 12.31% in each group, a statistically significant underutilization. And again, in this category, we looked at primes plus subcontractors. In professional services, there was no measurable subcontracting. So the numbers here really represent, they are prime plus sub, but there really was no subcontracting. So it's prime. And in that case, there was a percentage of all MWBEs of 23.71%, compared with available firms of 48.53%. In this case, we have an overutilization of Hispanic American owned firms, and we have an underutilization of Asian American owned firms, but it was not statistically significant. So if you'll see, Asian American firms are at 81.88, which is just inside the zone of not being statistically significant. And again, overall for MWBEs, percentage of dollars was 23.71%, compared to 48.53% of available firms. In other services, we're looking again at prime and subcontracting. There was subcontracting in other services. The total MWBE is 3.44%, compared to 339.94%. Of available firms. And again, in every category, there is a statistically significant underutilization of all MWBE groups. In goods, again, no appreciable subcontracting, which is to be expected in goods. So although it is a prime plus sub, there were really no subs. So the total MWBE percentage of dollars is 1.22%. The percentage of available firms is 30.67%. And again, in every MWBE group, there was a statistically significant underutilization. Our overall finding was that GSPC found statistically significant underutilization of all minority and women-owned groups in all five industry categories except Asian American and Hispanic American owned firms as prime contractors in professional services. Again, our regression analysis that I explained, that was where we kind of equalized everything else out to see if there was still a disparity. And we found that the disparities by race, ethnicity, and gender status of the firm owners remained even after controlling for capacity and other race and gender neutral factors. Also, we did extensive anecdotal collection. We had public hearings. We did individual interviews. We had focus groups. We did an informational meeting for which people talked to us. We did an extensive survey of firms, and we also talked to organizations and then invited email comments. Some firms called us. So we had a lot of outreach to the community to get anecdotal evidence, and it agreed in most part with what our statistical evidence found. So these are the recommendations that we have going forward. So the first is technical assistance and review of specialization. One of the biggest issues, I think, particularly on the port side, is that your work is very specialized. So what we are urging the port to do is to invite firms in, to work with firms, to see if there is a way to provide technical assistance so that more firms can provide services to the port. For example, if we've got commercial painting companies and you have a particular scope of work that is painting cranes, what would it take for firms who do commercial painting to be able to paint cranes? That's just a good example. We also recommend that you provide some policies that encourage and reward firms for mentoring MWBEs. You know, there's a program, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey has a robust supplier diversity and mentor protege program that matches skills with firms that do work. You know, there are a number of other areas. You know, the DOTs, although they don't do this same specialization that the ports have, they do have specialized services. And so there are lots of of you can look at some of the types of supportive services they have as well. Sewer districts, again, very specialized services. A number of them have started mentorship programs and provided technical assistance. Our second recommendation is strengthening institutional support of the Small Business Development Program, and particularly with the new race and gender components that we are recommending. We, in a lot of our interviews, we did not find that there was a lot of institutional support for this program. And so we really are asking that all the way up and down the line, that there be an emphasis on the purposes and the missions of this program. We've also recommended MWB subcontracting goals. Your small business development program has done a great job bringing in MWBEs as small businesses. But what we found was about 70% of all of the small business prime awards were in fact to MWBEs, and that's a great percentage. But we also found that only about 8% of your contracts are being awarded to small businesses. So we really think that by having a race and gender conscious program, it will help to increase your MWBE participation and to ameliorate a lot of those very deep disparities that we saw. Robust good faith efforts. If you have a goal set, and again, we're talking about contract by contract goals for subcontracting. If you have these goals set and firms do not meet those goals, you have to give them the opportunity to demonstrate good faith efforts. In other words, they use good faith efforts, they tried and couldn't meet the goal. But if they don't meet the goal and they haven't demonstrated good faith efforts, then they should be deemed non-responsive on that bid. We recommend also a small business reserve program. You could establish a benchmark of dollars under which only small businesses could bid. Given the fact that we did see that 70% of your small business awards did go to MWBEs, if you now create that kind of a pool for small businesses, which is a race and gender neutral program, it should also increase your MWBE participation. And then mandatory subcontracting and professional services. Again, we saw very little subcontracting there. And being able to bring firms in as subcontractors would again help to bring in small minority and women-owned firms. So we're looking for mandatory subcontracting in those areas. Unbundling contracts. We know that the port, for a lot of reasons, has very large contracts. We're asking that you review those contracts to see if there is an ability to unbundle them. When they are very large like that, there's no opportunity for small or minority or women-owned businesses. And then strengthening outreach and forecasting. One of the major things we heard from firms in the marketplace was just feeling like there was an informal network. In other words, you're in or you're out in terms of doing business with the port. Strengthening your outreach and letting firms know that you're open to doing business, and not just open to doing business, but assisting businesses with coming in to work with the port would be very important. Forecasting, if firms think there's kind of this good old boy network and there are only certain firms who hear about things early, then the more you forecast, the earlier you put out the fact that there is work coming up, the less of a informal network there is, and that will begin to dismantle that, hopefully, that image. Then consider creating tailored commodity codes. Right now, you're using NIGP codes, which are very broad categories. So even in terms of notifying people of upcoming bids, it's a very broad, you know, that's a very broad thing in terms of NIGP codes. And also being able to narrow down the types of work, specific types of work, rather than very broad categories, would be helped by having these more tailored commodity codes. Prompt pay review. In our survey, there was no MWB firm that said that they had been paid later than 60 days, but we heard in some staff interviews that prompt pay had become an issue for both primes and subcontractors. So it's just an area that we'd like to make sure you're keeping your eye on. And then bonding assistance, it's not unusual that one of the things that keeps firms from bidding is bonding. So the next steps were to accept the disparity study report and its recommendations, do a gap analysis, which is which ones of our recommendations you can do under existing authority, and then which ones need new authorization, draft a new program plan, and then plan for that implementation. We know that there will be some additional budget and staffing needs, but then you got to take that one step at a time. What are you going to do first? What are the phases and the tasks? And then to develop a training protocol and train staff. Ongoing is to execute the five steps of contract compliance. Assessment, which is looking at the assessment of individual MWB availability and capacities. Now you begin to look at specific scopes of work and who can do what specific scopes of work. Doing outreach, again, letting ongoing campaign of letting the community know that the Port Authority wants to do business with them and is willing to work with firms to create opportunities and assist them in building capacity. Certification, continue to encourage firms and assist them in getting certified. And procurement, we want to see a greater involvement of the SBDP staff in developing solicitations and then moving forward and being involved in all stages. Monitoring is essential. Firms will promise what they're going to do, but it's important to make sure that they in fact live up to what they've promised to do in their original bid packages. So that completes our presentation. And we're open to any questions. Again, we have our chief statistician, Dr. Ram Hagigi, our principal investigator, Vince Egan, our project executive, and our CEO, Rodney Strong, here to assist with any questions.
Great. Thank you so much for that presentation. Commissioners, I think that just to start with, from my perspective, I want to make sure that we understand that you have not had a chance to go through this report in detail, given that it just came out a few days ago. And so ultimately, this is a draft report, and I think we need to make sure that we understand that, and we need to sort of fully vet it at the commission. So each of you need to really read it and understand it, and then let's take the time through our procurement committee to go through and really digest it and understand, and ultimately have staff and our procurement committee and small business committee to come in and make recommendations in the future. So with that said, commissioners, do you have any questions for the group at this point?
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a quick question or two.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm curious on the, I'm a little fuzzy on the availability of the firms versus the capability of the firms. For instance, you stated, I believe that there were 532 minority and women-owned businesses in construction services that were available. As you know, a lot of our construction projects are not normal construction projects, they're marine construction projects. I'm curious as to the discussions that you had with the 500 some odd businesses that said that they were available. I'm assuming that you're saying that that's just a gross figure, that if they were trained in marine construction, they could do business with the port, or are there 532 businesses right now that are capable of doing marine construction in the Houston area?
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I was going to say that when we do our analysis is based on your NAICS codes, In other words, on your NIGP codes and what you're currently using as an NIGP code. So all of the firms that we have that we listed, in fact, do work in the categories. And again, we don't, for purposes of a disparity study, we don't drill down to specific scopes of work. We drill down to the NIGP codes. So if these firms perform services in those NIGP codes, that we're counting them as available. Again, our analysis is to look at industries, not at specific scope of works. The specific scopes of work you'll take into account when you do contract by contract goal setting. And again, contract by contract goal setting means if you have a project that comes up and it's got various different scopes of work in it, then you will break down those scopes of work and see which firms are available to actually perform those scopes of work and set a goal based on that. But for purposes of our disparity analysis, we are looking at the, sorry, that's my dog, looking at the particular industries to determine whether there's been any. And so these are all firms who are available in the industries and in the NIGP codes where you actually do business.
Okay, I'm trying to get my arms around. I hope that staff will be able to look at the figures as we drill down and try to determine what specific companies are available. And I really like the idea of the skills and mentor training that I think that we need to support to train a lot of these businesses to be able to be qualified to do business with the port. I'm concerned that the broad brush paints this picture of enormous disparities when we probably need to be about getting small minority and women-owned businesses trained and qualified to do business. I think there are two different things that we're really looking at, the gross figures versus specific figures.
Absolutely, that's what you're looking at. There's big difference between what we're looking at in terms of a disparity study, which does do broad, they are looking at broad industries, versus your particular carrying out of your particular scopes of work, which is why we recommended contract by contract goal setting rather than across the board goal. You know, when a lot of people try to impose an aspirational goal. So they'll set one goal across all projects. Like it'll be a 20% goal across all projects. That's not narrowly tailored to the kind of work you do. What's narrowly tailored is taking each project and looking at those scopes of work and determining what the availability is on those projects. And that happens in implementation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would hope personally what comes out of it is a program uniquely designed for the port that involves a lot of mentoring, a lot of qualifying small businesses, minority and women-owned businesses to do business with the port. I think it's all in all of our best interest. We certainly acknowledge that we have ways to go. I'm trying to get my arms around whether it's this drastic of a disparity or do we really need to be working on getting businesses qualified? And it sounds like we need a lot of work, particularly in getting these minority women-owned businesses qualified to do business. Roger, the only other question is, have y'all done any, has the port done any drilling down yet of any of these figures? Did you see anything that concerned you with the disparity study figures or what was used or anything?
Well, or what we did receive late last week is, you know, for the first time, the data behind this and we're still trying to get our arms around that. I think the important thing is understanding what the basis is to build a program. Just out of concern, you know, versus what we've done before, we got a very good small business program and we need to expound upon that, you know, with the MWBE program as well. But to answer your question, as an example, you know, just in the goods category, you know, there's a significant dollar amount in the goods that is for the purchase of wharf cranes, you know, which typically, you know, there's no one in the United States or, you know, MWBs that were qualified. Typically what we're used to doing is exempting those projects out in our small business program if there's no availability. That's just an example that we found as something we need to get our arms around. And again, just trying to make sure that we have a basis where we can have metrics for making these improvements moving forward, not in any way to discount the conclusions of the study. We just want to tailor our program and our around our port business and provide this incremental opportunities for MWBE vendors.
Yeah, let me make a quick comment too. So when you have specialized contracts, and I think this is to Michelle's point, you have to understand the availability in those contracts, and then you have to be able to break the contracts down and get as much participation as you can. So in my past, public lives, both at Houston First and at the Harris County Houston Sports Authority, all of those projects, which probably total over $2.5 billion worth of business, we had MWBE goals. And when we had, for example, something that was really hard to figure out how you get an MWB component, it was set aside and separately identified. Now, all of those projects, because of the hard work that everyone did in terms of expanding capacity and training and mentorship and smaller contracts, all hit 30% MWB goals. And I could tell you, like an example would be the Marriott Marquis Hotel that was built. Now, that was built privately with some public dollars from the city, a substantial amount of public dollars for the city. So it was Ira Minster, who was the developer, was required to try to hit these, to hit a 30% goal. And Ira would tell you today that it was harder for him to sort of break the contracts up and make it work, but he did make it work. He did hit his goal. And he would tell you today that it didn't cost him $1 more, and that some of his MWB contractors actually performed much better than his non-MWB contractors. So, you know, this is really about kind of a mark today in the sand, and we obviously need to understand the report and understand the basis for the numbers and all that. But it's just a way for us now to move forward and to think through how do we actually set up a program that works for the port and the specific kinds of categories that the port has. And I think that that's the goal, and hopefully we can move forward with that in that spirit.
I'd also like you to consider that, remember, the issue of discrimination comes in here. There mm-hmm. is a but for discrimination. So I understand that when you're doing your contract by contract goals, you're looking at today who can do the work. And even when you're talking about, you know, large purchases of goods or whatever it is, what we're taking into account is now you have not taken into account injecting discrimination. So there may be firms who currently can't do the work, but for discrimination. There may be firms who are in certain categories, but don't do so specialties, but for discrimination. There may not even be firms that exist in your marketplace, but for discrimination. So our study inserts that mm-hmm. aspect of discrimination. So there is not going to be a one-on-one, here are the firms we can use today, so therefore those are the only firms we should be counting, because that takes out the aspect of but for discrimination. Mm-hmm. So our study includes the but-for discrimination. Your execution kind of takes that out of the equation when you're doing contract by contract, which is why we've made the recommendations we've made, so that there are more firms who are not hampered by discrimination and who can then be included through some supportive services, through technical assistance, through a lot of maybe even just assessing what their real skills are and bringing them into the fold. And we do look at all aspects, so there are no exclusions, because a disparity study, the idea is it looks at every dollar you spent and who it went to, without looking at, well, where, well, these are really the firms who can do the work. Well, here are the firms who really can't do the work, because you haven't included the aspect of discrimination in there.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I want to ask a question, if you don't mind, of Ms. Jenkins, and it gets back to availability. And I just wanted to make sure that I understand the numbers and going through the report. So if you're looking at a category of professional services, I'm just making up, and you look at, say, architects, were you able to say, for example, in the area of African-American or Black-owned, you looked at in our very large region, the total number of African-American architects, and then from that number, you whittled down those that were demonstrated some interest in doing business with the port, et cetera. So you were able in some way to identify the totality of that particular group.
Yeah. And what we used for our benchmark are those who have at least expressed interest in doing business with government by at least registering. So in other words, we went out and looked at all of the lists of government people who have registered to do business with government, and if they were inside the relevant geographic market and they provide the services in the industry categories of those five industry categories, then they were counted.
Any other commissioner questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is just questions for now, and we can deliberate and do the motion under finance.
Okay.
Well, I was just confirming, I was asking.
Yes, no, absolutely. This is question, and it's Q&A here, and we will debate the motion in at the appropriate time.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, hearing none, we appreciate the report. We will be studying it and the data under it and the recommendations very vigorously. So thank you so much for your presentation today and your report. We'll move on then to, we have some other public comment. So thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Next is Ingrid M. Robinson, the president of the Houston Minority Supplier Development Council. So Ingrid, would you please make sure you are, Kelly, make sure she's unmuted, and I see you there.
Awesome.
Perfect. And remember, we have 3 minutes here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So thank you so much for the opportunity to address the port commissioners and to comment on the disparity study. As you know, HMSDC represents over 150 major corporations and over 650 minority-owned businesses across all ethnicities, African-American, Hispanic, Native American, Asian Indian, and Asian Pacific. We generate about 67,000 or employ about 67,000 employees through our minority-owned businesses, and generate about $1.4 billion in incremental business tax revenue and $23 billion in economic production to the city of Houston. So the port's current contracting program is designed for small businesses through a race-neutral business means of encouraging minority women businesses to participate as small businesses. But based on the results of the disparity study that was shared with us moments ago, it's apparent that we need to achieve more of the port's desired result for minority business inclusion. So I encourage and support a race and gender conscious program being outlined by the representatives from the disparity study, Ms. Jenkins, to how do we go about doing that. So as a member of the Port Small Business Advisory Committee, I offer our council's assistance and our expertise in minority business development to identify and help create better utilization strategies to increase MWB participation. I also want to assure you that the port has been an active corporate member of HMSDC represented by Tim Finley on our board of directors, and we work closely with Gilda Ramirez to increase opportunities and to partner whenever we can on programs. However, we must assume that there is not always much more that we can do to ensure that we're meeting the ideas and goals. So while I'm not necessarily happy that we have identified such disparities, I do want to tell you that I'm excited about, I think, the opportunities based on the recommendations that were shared, that there are some things that we can do to help support and help the port meet its goals. So in the area of technical assistance and review of specialization, HMSDC can provide specialization review of technical assistance through a program we have called Pathways to Excellence, which is used by both private sector and public sector entities to ensure that minority and women-owned businesses can meet the needs and qualifying needs, sort of your ticket to entry. And we also have the aspect of a national network. So if we don't have minority and women-owned businesses who have certain capabilities here, because we're a part of a network, we can identify minority and women-owned businesses in other areas of the country that may have that expertise that they could bring to Houston and partner with Houston area firms to build that capability and capacity here in Houston. They also talked about subcontracting goals. We have through our marketplace committee, we have a strategic teaming alliance committee, which works on helping minority owned businesses understand how to partner together to be able to compete for opportunities they cannot compete for on their own. So by helping them form these strategic alliances, we're able to identify firms that could potentially meet those desired requirements for Port Houston. I think
well, we appreciate you're a little over your 3 minutes now, so we're going to have one last moment.
Okay. So finally, I just want to say, I think that one of the things that we can bring to you as the example given is because we are working across industries, we could identify minority businesses, perhaps in oil and gas, deep shore or offshore, that could provide services to the port as we look at expanding capabilities of MWBE firms. So moving them across industries to be able to support the port. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions? Okay, thank you so much. Our next speaker is Nanette Ray. She is with the MBE Input Committee, Chair of the Houston Minority Supplier Diversity Council. We will go ahead and unmute her line. And remember, we have a 3-minute limit, so watch it yourself, okay? So where are we here?
I'm here. Good morning.
Perfect. Good morning.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Nanette Ray, and I'm with TNR Accounting and Management Consulting, LLC. I'm the incoming chair for the Houston Minority Supplier Development Council's Minority Business Enterprise Input Committee, also known as MBEIC. The MBEIC is the voice of minority business owners to the 150 plus major corporations and government entities that support HMSDC. HMSDC MBEs generate almost approximately $17 billion in annual revenue and over $4 billion in salaries and benefits, which creates a stronger supply chain for HMSDC's corporate members. On behalf of all the minority-owned businesses I represent today, we have a few things we'd like for the Port Houston to consider. I would like to encourage the Port Houston to adopt recommendations that are led by the data found in this disparity study, which would lead to creation of a program that takes into account the ethnic and gender diversity of its vendors. In addition, we would also like to offer our assistance to identify barriers and offer narrowly tailored solutions to remove obstacles in the procurement process. I would also like to offer to host a focus group or meeting of our member MBEs to engage in an active discussion on how to increase engagement and utilization of MBEs. And I just want to take this time to thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the MBEs of the Houston Minority Supplier Development Council. Thank you.
Oh, Chairman, you're muted.
Oh, yes, I am. Wow. Usually I'm not. But thanks so much for your comments, and we look forward to working with you. We have one more speaker, and that would be Terrence Narcisi, which is founder and executive of East Harris County Empowerment Council. And I'm sorry if I screwed up your name. I can't say Smith.
No worries. It's Narcis. Good morning, everyone. Okay. I'm Terrence Narcisse, as the chairman mentioned, with East Harris County Empowerment Council. Our mission is to improve the quality of life for the two small cities of Jacinto City and Galena Park and the unincorporated communities of Crosby, Channelview, Sheldon, and North Shore. We are also members of the Healthy Port Coalition, Communities Coalition as well. And first of all, thank you all for taking some economic leadership to complete the disparity studies. I find the data to be very interesting. And it also presents several opportunities for our region to be stronger and better. My question or concern is, will the report be released in its entirety on the website that you all have made available to the public?
And the answer is yes, absolutely.
Okay. Do you all have a timetable for when that will be released? Because I'd imagine that it would have to go through, you know, iterations and things like that.
Roger, do you, you know, what kind of time frame do you think your team's going to need to kind of go through it and make sure and put it in final form?
Well, I think I don't know exactly how long. I know we're going to act quickly through the Small Business and Procurement Task Force. So, you know, I think we need a few weeks to absorb and get our arms around the data and start putting a program together and a recommendation to the commission.
I would say that we want to get it out sooner rather than later, but let our team at least have the time to digest the numbers and understand and have some Q&A with between the commissioners so that we can get it out. But there's nothing, you know, for me, in our perspective, once we have had that time, this will all be absolutely public. And we will also have, once we get a program organized by the committee is open, you know, for people to be on that committee meeting as well. And then ultimately by the full Port Commission as well. So we'll have plenty of public dialogue once we get to the point where we can, where everybody signs off on the document.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Great. Okay. Any commissioners, any other questions? Okay, Eric, are we, that is the last name on the list, correct? No one else sign up?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, so we are now back to our, to the item F. And Tom, you're going to go ahead and take these items. So go ahead and get after it.
Thank you, Chairman. The first items under executive I'd like to speak about are F2, which is to approve the service agreement with the Greater Houston Port Bureau to provide vessel traffic movement data, which is real time, and to subscribe to their Harbor Lights system. That the two of those will cost us about $90,000. The vessel traffic is what we use to build the harbor fee along this channel. Next item is F3. That is for the approval and adoption of the internal audit 2021 plan. This plan was discussed at the audit committee meeting and approved by that group. There are really no major changes to the program from in the past. And finally, F4 is the pilot board amended interlocal agreement that was discussed earlier today. So I ask the commission to approve items F1 through F4.
Okay, is there a motion?
Motion.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments on any of these items? Okay, hearing none, let's call for any negative votes on items F1 through 4. Hearing no negative votes, the items pass. Go ahead on G, moving to G, commercial.
Under commercial, I'd like to talk about G2, which is approve the Sixth Amendment with Sesco Cement Lease. This is the property on the Turning Basin South Side. What is being requested by Sesco is they originally did a 31.5-year lease. They would like that original lease to be extended to 50 years. So it's 50 years from back in June of 2017. It's not 50 years from today. So we're adding 18.5 years. They're also willing through this agreement to increase their minimum annual guarantee of tonnage moving across the dock from 1 million tons to 2 million tons a year. So I ask the commission to approve items G1 through G3.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments on these items? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes. Hearing none, items G1 through 3 pass. Okay, now we're in finance. Let's see. On finance, let's hold on number one, and then we'll have a discussion on number one. And then let's go ahead and talk about 2 through 6, Tom.
Okay, H2 is the annual to authorize the annual payments to the different Harris County group for services related to our outstanding general obligation bonds. First one is to Harris County Appraisal District at $405,000. And the second one is the Harris County Tax Assessor Collector for collection services in the amount of $1.1 million. H4 is to approve the actuarial evaluation report for our Port Authority restated retirement plan. This is the defined benefit pension that we have for some employees. Good news is after this report, which was done dated August 1, 2020, which is the program start, is that the fund is valued at $191 million, which is 93.4% funded. That is funded at that level with the assumption rate change we just made from 6.5 to 6.6. So a very strong program that we have there. The next two are rated H5 and H6. We are constantly evaluating our investment policies for both our retirement plan and our OPEB, other post-employment benefits. So we, a while back, put in an asset category of real assets, which includes limited partnerships in infrastructure and MLPs. We've never purchased anything under that asset category, and we have rethought that as a category that we want to have in our program, and we are going to remove that. And this was discussed at the last benefit task force meeting. We also want to give the domestic equity manager some flexibility, because right now there's a mismatch on what the fund benchmark weighting can be versus what the manager's benchmark weighting. So the fund may say you can do 10% of a certain asset, but the manager can only do 5%. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we want to make sure those are both the same moving forward. So at this point, I would ask for approval of H2 through 6, and we can come back to H1.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Second?
I second.
Okay. Any questions or comments on any of these items, commissioners? Okay. Hearing none, do I have any negative votes on items H2 through 6? Hearing none, items H2 through 6 pass. Okay, let's go back to item number one, which is the review and deliberation of possible action regarding the Port Authority disparity study. I think Commissioner Clunan has a motion that she would like to make on that, and then we'll discuss it after that. So, Commissioner?
Sure. So I'd like to move to authorize the executive director to develop a plan of action and program for the commission's consideration to address disparities in the participation of small minority women and women owned businesses in Port Authority contracts. The proposed plan of action and program should address departmental responsibilities for, but not be limited to, the following: development of goals, objectives, and measurements, implementation guidelines, procurement and award of contracts, monitoring, administration, and accountability of these contracts, and awareness and accessibility of the program and its administration. And it should also include budget recommendations for proposed staffing, support, training, necessary technology investments, and timelines.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. And are there any questions or comments?
I just want to take a second and express my appreciation for the Ports Disparity Study. I recognize that it's still, you know, under review and being refined, but I know that it was a long time coming. I know that it was a collaboration of many stakeholders, external partners, my fellow commissioners and management. So thank y'all. After my review last week, I had a lot of questions, and I sincerely appreciate the port team's effort in being so responsive and quick on all of my inquiries. I'm a firm believer, you've heard me say, that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And so given the information and the benchmarking we have, we now must move forward with a plan to address and eliminate barriers for minority and women-owned businesses seeking to do business with the port. We can couple these policy changes and programs we do with, you know, procedures to effectuate the intent of the policy, but making sure it's done with fidelity. And as, you know, Mr. Chairman mentioned, we are not alone in our endeavors. Harris County did their disparity study and adopted their policy. Metro is coming out with their City of Houston. So I just strongly feel that this is an opportunity where we as the port can do better. And I look forward to making meaningful progress, to looking forward and going from there, and for us to do this expeditiously. And I think in the end, it's going to ultimately benefit the greater Houston region and community. So thank y'all very much for all of the hard work.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, yes. I think Commissioner Clunan has laid out a great plan of action. I look forward to working with her on the small business task force and getting this done. And I think it's high time that we get this completed and behind us. And we've got a tremendous amount of support in the community, all the governmental agencies, and it appears at the port and on the commission. So it's time to move forward and get this job completed. So look forward to working with you, Commissioner.
Okay. Other commissioners? Okay, we have a motion and a second, and I don't hear any other comments. Commissioner Meese, are you trying to speak there?
Not at all.
Okay. All right. So with that, there are no other comments. Do I have any negative votes? Okay, hearing no negative votes, item H1 passes. Okay, great. I would like to just thank the whole team at the port. I know this is was a big project, and I know Gilda Ramirez and her team spent a lot of time on this, and will spend a whole lot more time on this, and as will the rest of the port team. And when you think about a $600 million small business program that had 70% MWB participation, that's pretty darn good. And I know we have a long ways to go, but we need to. This will be. You know, the first step and hopefully what will be a meaningful program. So with that, let's go ahead and move on to item I. So Tom, you want to take items I? What,
yeah.
Number six?
Under infrastructure, I'd like to talk about I1, which is the approval of staff recommendation to award a 2-year contract environmental consulting agreement with Spirit Environmental for general environmental services. What they do is they conduct the field studies and inspections. They assist with regulatory reviews, site assessments, if we have any asbestos or mold issues. So we are looking forward to working with Spirit in this venture. The second one is I2. It's to approve staff recommendation to award a contract to Jacobs Engineering for the design of Wharf 7 at Bayport Container Terminal. This is a 1,000-foot wharf built to the 51-foot depth and capable of handling the new 158-foot ship-to-shore cranes that we have now gone to as our standard. The process of the actual wharf, we will do this for about a year. The design will award the contract for the construction mid-year 2020 and be done with completion of Wharf 7 in late 2023. And finally, I-13. We've done this twice before where we are asking for approval to enter into a reimbursement agreement. This time it's with Energy Transfer Operations for the design and permitting related to pipeline movements for Project 11. All of the other ones that we have done have been in segment four of the project. This one is actually in segment one, so it will be worked on sooner than the other ones that you've previously approved. So by federal rules, we are required to pay 50% of the cost. So we're asking for the $1 million we believe it will cost PHA. So I ask the commission to approve items I-1 through I-13.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, any questions, commissioners?
Yeah, I have one.
Okay.
In number two, we're doing Wharf 7, and I understand that it's extremely hard to know exactly what you're going to run into, but I'm asking whoever engineers that, whether it be us or whomever, that they go out of their way to make sure we don't end up with all the change orders that we end up with when we start developing these wharfs. It seems like we run into it all the time. Number five is an example. It's 226 that we're adding on again because somebody missed something or we're not getting into it deep enough. And it bothers me that it seems like, and I understand that it's hard to tell what's under the water, but it seems like to me we could do a little bit more investigation before we get into all of this stuff to stop some of this change orders that come up. This is kind of a small one compared to some of them that we usually get. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. I agree. More investigation on the front end. Any other commissioner questions? Okay, if not, do I hear any negative votes on items 1 through 13 in I? Hearing none, items 1 through 13 pass. Okay, so let's go to operations.
Under operations, the first one I would like to speak about is J3. That's to amend Port Authority Tariffs 8, 14, and 15. We have three items that were asking to be adjusted. One is to increase the harbor fee by 3%. This harbor fee is what is mandated to help us offset the cost of the fire protection along the channel that was given to us by the state. We try to break even. The last 3 years we have not broken even, so we're trying to cut some of those expenses. We have had some disputes on equipment rental process in terms of disputing the actual invoice. So we're putting a time limit on how long people have to come back and dispute their bill. And finally, we set up a few years ago when we had the privately owned empty yards and put into Bayport a gate charge for the empty containers and the chassis that are going directly to the empty yard. So we need to do the same thing at Barber's Cut since we are starting the process to have a private empty yard at Barber's Cut. J6, back in a while ago in April, you gave authority for us to put a freeze, if you will, on the volume incentive timing, and we did that for May 1 through October 31st. Well, January 1 rates are done off of those periods. So we are asking to continue that COVID relief for volume incentives through the next 6 month period so that we can not affect people that we told we were going to give the incentive through October 31st. And finally, something we've been working on for a long time, and we really want to appreciate the work that the city of Pasadena did as well. We would like to authorize the amendment to the industrial water supply agreement with the city of Pasadena. There was a complicated water agreement because of the cruise ships at Bayport and how much water they were going to use. That is now going to be redone with a more straightforward and water supply agreement, which will have us paying the then current rate for industrial users for water. It will also allow us to include all of our properties in Pasadena around Bayport. And finally, when we built the water tower out at Bayport for Bayport, PHA needed about 500,000 gallons. Pasadena asked us to build it at 1 million, and they are going to start reimbursing us to a credit of our water bills for their share, which is about $1.3 million. So all of this is cleaned up. We will get out of the original water, and they have already agreed to it from their city council. So I ask the commission to approve items J1 through J8.
I so move that we approve 1 through 7.
You don't like eight?
There's an eighth one that came late Friday.
And I put 8 in too then.
Okay, that's a good idea. So we have a motion to approve J1 through 8. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments, commissioners? Hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes. Hearing none, items J1 through 8 pass. Okay, let's go to people.
Under people, the first three are all interrelated. It's for our self-funded group medical benefit program. One is our stop loss insurance that we buy. We have stop loss on any individual claim of over $175,000 and an aggregate claim for the whole program of $18 million, so we have insurance for that. Two is for the third-party administration services for the program. And then three is the actual funding of the program at $15.5 million. 2019 proved a good year for us to change from fully insured to self-insured for medical. 2020 looks really good, but then again, not a whole lot of people have used medical for 2020, so we'll take that with a grain of salt. However, the money we would have paid for fully insured has been put into the fund, so we are running some reserves, which will help us in the long run. So therefore, I ask the commission to approve items K1 through K4.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Is that a motion, Clyde?
I move.
Okay. We have a second.
Second.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
I'd just like to say, Mr. Chairman, that I think staff did a great job with this. The numbers look real competitive to me on the stop loss and the administrative fees. And you know, we're going to save money. I mean, this is what we're here to do. Just good job, folks. Way to go.
Thanks. Agreed. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes on K1 through K4. Hearing none, the items pass, K1 through K4. Let's go to Port Security Emergency Operations. Tom?
The first item is L1. It's to approve staff ranking for a 2-year shipyard maintenance services to Southwest Shipyard, which is the one directly across from our building, if you remember where our building is, since we haven't been there in so long. But the majority of this contract is for the three fireboats. It's about 600 of the 691,000. The rest is about 80 some thousand for the Sam Houston, and the rest for the work boats, the Farnsworth and Vernon Bailey. This is just maintenance. If there are any major issues, we bring those back to you individually. So this is just the standard maintenance we do on the boats during the process. The next item is L3. It's to renew our MOU with the City of Houston to provide closed point of dispensing services in the event of a public health emergency. What this is PHA has been, a pod has been set up, which includes all PHA staff, pilots, stevedores, and other vital port workers and their families, that if there is a public health emergency and there's a pill that can be given out, we will have people trained to hand them out to our group. This does not include shots, so it will not include COVID. Therefore, I ask the commission to approve items L1 through L3.
Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for negative votes on L1 through 3. Sounds like they pass. L1 through 3 passes. Okay, technology.
Under technology, M1 is to approve staff ranking for a 5-year security services contract with Critical Start in the amount of $3.1 million. In addition to that $3.1 million, we do have a $600,000 grant that will be put against the contract. So we're looking at about $620,000 a year for 5 years. What this includes is the continuation of what we previously set up with a security operations center. What this means is we have somebody 24/7, 365 watching our system for any intrusions or malware, anything that could affect our systems. We also are paying a couple $100,000 a year that is taking the SOC, the Security Operations Center, and inserting the tools that are necessary to do the research and to keep an eye on what's going on with our systems. So the rest of it is how that system uses intelligent information to learn from the finding and to set up programs for random hits and how we maintain our strength in cybersecurity. Cybersecurity has become as everybody knows, a number one priority for us. And this is how we amend our staff, since we can't have people 24/7 watching over. We use a program like this. I ask the commission to approve items M1 through M3.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments, commissioners? Hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes on items M1 through 3. Okay, hearing none, items M1 through 3 pass. Okay, so we are going to then now go into an executive session. Eric, do you want to read what we're supposed to say?
Absolutely. It is now 11:08 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority of Harris County, Texas will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding Kozlowski v. Buck, proposed amendments to agreements for legal services with Baker Watering, Haynes and Boone, Alan Hoagland and Amy Klein, deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut Terminal and Beltway 8 vicinity properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation, public attorneys, including deliberation regarding amendment to the deployment agreement with the executive director of the Port Authority and security-related matters. Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Open session of the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority at 12:21 p.m. So do we have any motions from the executive session?
Yes,
I have one, Chairman. I have a motion to give you the permission to negotiate with Roger Gunther on future compensation for the port.
Okay, the motion is to authorize the chairman to have the authority to modify the contract for Roger Gunther. Is there a second?
A second, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions or comments? If not, I'll call for negative votes. Hearing none, the motion passes. Do we have any other motions?
Yes, I would ask a commissioner to make a motion to authorize the Port Authority to enter into or amend agreements for legal services with Baker Wotring, Haynes and Boone, Alan Hoagland, and Amy Klein on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
Got a lot of moving going on. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Is there any questions or comments? Hearing none, any negative votes? No negative votes, the motion passes. Okay, so we are now, we're at adjourning the meeting. Any question, any last comments with commissioners? Only thing I'd like to say is just happy holidays to everyone. Stay safe and appreciate your time today. And we got a lot of work to do next year.
Same to you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other commissioners? Okay, I think we're staying. So we'll officially adjourn the meeting.